closet and got all cozy on the couch underneath them, with my chocolate-covered pretzels and my mug of hot chocolate. How the Grinch Stole Christmas was on, and I fell asleep to the sound of the Whos in Whoville singing, "Welcome Christmas." I woke up to the sound of someone breaking into the house. I heard banging on the door and then someone messing with the doorknob. At first, I just lay there under my blankets, scared out of my mind and trying not to breathe too loud. I kept thinking, oh my God, oh my God, it's just like in Home Alone. What would Kevin do? What would Kevin do? Kevin would probably booby-trap the front hall, but there was no time for any of that. And then the burglar called out, "Steven, are you in there?" I thought, oh my God, the other robber is already in the house, and his name is Steven! I hid under the blanket. And then I thought, Kevin would not hide under a blanket. He would protect his house. I took the brass poker from the fireplace and my cell phone, and I crept over to the foyer. I was too scared to look out the window, and I didn't want him to see me, so I just pressed my body up against the door and listened hard, my finger on the number 9. "Steve? Open up! It's me!" My heart nearly stopped beating. I knew that voice. It was not the voice of a burglar. It was Conrad. I flung the door open. It really was him. I gazed at him, and he gazed back. I didn't know it would feel that way to see him again. Hard in my throat. Hard to breathe. For those couple of seconds, I forgot everything, and there was just him. He was wearing a winter coat I had never seen before. Camel-colored, and he was sucking on a mini candy cane. It fell out of his mouth. "What in the world?" he said, his mouth still open. When I hugged him, he smelled like peppermint and Christmas. His cheek was cold against mine.
"Why are you holding a poker?"
I stepped back. "I thought you were a burglar."
"Of course you did."
He followed me back to the living room and sat in the chair opposite the couch. He still had that shocked look on his face.
"What are you doing here?"
I shrugged and set the poker on the coffee table. My adrenaline rush was fading fast, and I was starting to feel pretty silly. I was all alone at home, and I just felt like coming. "What are you doing here? I didn't even know you were coming back." Conrad was in California now. I hadn't seen him since he'd transferred the year before. He had some scruff on his face, like he hadn't shaved in a couple of days. It looked soft, though, not prickly. He looked tan, too, which I thought was weird, seeing how it was winter, and then I remembered that he went to school in California, where it was always sunny.
"My dad sent me a ticket at the last minute. It took us forever to land because of the snow, so I got here late. Since Jer and my dad are still in New York, I figured I'd just come here."
He squinted at me. "What?" I asked, feeling self-conscious all of a sudden. I tried to smooth down the back of my hair. It was all fuzzy from being slept on. Discreetly, I touched the corners of my mouth. Had I been drooling?
"You have chocolate all over your face."
I wiped at my mouth with the back of my hand. "No, I don't," I lied. "It's probably just dirt." Amused, he raised his eyebrows at the near-empty can of chocolate-covered pretzels.
"What, did you just put your whole head in it to save time?"
"Shut it," I said, but I couldn't help smiling. The only light in the room was from the flickering TV. It was so surreal, being with him like this. A truly random twist of what felt like fate. I shivered and drew my blankets closer to me. Taking off his coat, he said,
"Want me to start a fire?"
Right away, I said, "Yes!" I couldn't get it going for some reason.
"It takes a special touch,"
he said in his arrogant way. I knew by now it was only posturing. It was all so familiar. We had been here before. Just like this, only 2 Christmases ago. So much had happened since then. He had a whole new life now, and so did I. Still, in some ways, it was like no time or distance had passed between us. In some ways, It felt the same. Maybe he was thinking the same thing because he said, "It might be too late for a fire. I think I'm just gonna go crash." Abruptly, he stood up and headed for the staircase. Then he turned back and asked, "Are you sleeping down here?" "Yep," I said. "Snug as a bug in a rug." When he reached the staircase, Conrad stopped and then said, "Merry Christmas, Belly. It's really good to see you."
"You too."
The next morning, right when I woke up, I had this funny feeling that he had already left. I don't know why. I ran over to the stairs to check, and just as I was coming around the banister, I tripped over my pajama pants and fell flat on my back, banging my head along the way. I lay there with tears in my eyes, staring up at the ceiling. The pain was unreal. Then Conrad's head popped up above me.
"Are you okay?"
he asked, his mouth full of food, cereal, probably. He tried to help me sit up, but I waved him off. "Leave me alone," I mumbled, hoping that if I just blinked fast enough, my tears would dry up.
"Are you hurt? Can you move?"
"I thought you were gone," I said.
"Nope. Still here."
He knelt down beside me.
"Just let me try and lift you up."
I shook my head, no. Conrad got down on the floor next to me, and we both lay there on the wooden floor like we were about to start making snow angels.
"How bad does it hurt? On a scale of 1 to 10. Does it feel like you pulled something?"
"On a scale of 1 to 10. It hurts an 11.
"You're such a baby when it comes to pain," he said, but he sounded worried.
"I am not." I was about to prove him right. Even I could hear how teary I sounded.
"Hey, that fall you took was no joke. It was just like how animals slip and fall in cartoons, like with a banana peel."
Suddenly, I didn't feel like crying anymore. "Are you calling me an animal?" I demanded, turning my head to look at him. He was trying to keep a straight face, but the corners of his mouth kept turning up. Then he turned his head to look at me, and we both started laughing. I laughed so hard, my back hurt worse. Mid-laugh, I stopped and said, "Ow." He sat up and said,
"I'm gonna pick you up and bring you over to the couch."
"No," I protested weakly. "I'm too heavy for you. I'll get up in a minute. Just leave me here for now." Conrad frowned, and I could tell he was offended.
"I know I can't bench press my body weight like Jer, but I can pick up a girl, Belly."
I blinked. "It's not that. I'm heavier than you think. You know, freshman 15 or whatever." My face got hot, and I momentarily forgot about how badly my back hurt or how weird it was that he'd brought up Jer. I just felt embarrassed. In a quiet voice, he said,
"Well, you look the same to me."
Then, very gently, he scooped me off the floor and into his arms. I held on with one arm around his neck and said, "It was more like 10. Freshman 10. He said,
"Don't worry. I've got you."
He carried me over to the couch and set me down.
"I'm gonna get you some Advil. That should help a little."
Looking up at him, I had this sudden thought. Oh my God, I still love you. I'd thought my feelings for Conrad were safely tucked away, like my old rollerblades and the little gold watch my dad bought me when I first learned how to tell time. But just because you bury something, that doesn't mean it stops existing. Those feelings, they'd been there all along. All that time, I had to just face it. He was a part of my DNA. I had brown hair, and I had freckles, and I would always have Conrad in my heart. He would inhabit just that tiny piece of it, the little girl part that still believed in musicals, but that was it. That was all he got. Jeremiah would have everything else. The present me and the future me. That was what was important, not the past. Maybe that was how it was with all first loves. They own a little piece of your heart, always. Conrad at 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, even 17 years old. For the rest of my life, I would think of him fondly, the way you do your first pet, the first car you drove. Firsts were important, but I was pretty sure lasts were even more important. And Jeremiah, he was going to be my last, and my every, and my always. Conrad and I spent the rest of that day together, but not together. He started a fire, and then he read at the kitchen table while I watched It's a Wonderful Life. For lunch, we had canned tomato soup and the rest of my chocolate-covered pretzels. Then he went for a run on the beach, and I settled in for Casablanca. I was wiping tears from the corners of my eyes with my t-shirt sleeve when he came back. "This movie makes my heart hurt," I croaked. Taking off his fleece, Conrad said, "Why? It had a happy ending. She was better off with Laszlo." I looked at him in surprise. "You've seen Casablanca? Of course, it's a classic." "Well, obviously you weren't paying that close of attention because Rick and Ilsa are meant for each other." Conrad snorted. "Their little love story is nothing compared to the work Laszlo was doing for the Resistance." Blowing my nose with a napkin, I said, "For a young guy, you're way too cynical." He rolled his eyes. "And for a supposedly grown girl, you're way too emotional." He headed for the stairs. "Robot!" I yelled at his back. "Tin Man!" I heard him laughing as he closed the bathroom door. The next morning, Conrad was gone. He left, just like I thought he'd leave. No goodbye. No nothing. Just gone. Like a ghost. Conrad, the ghost of Christmas past. Jeremiah called me when I was on the way back home from Cousins. He asked what I was doing, and I told him I was driving home, but I didn't tell him where I was driving from. It was a split-second decision. At the time, I didn't know why I lied. I just knew I didn't want him to know. I decided Conrad was right, after all. Ilsa was meant to be with Laszlo. That was the way it was always supposed to end. Rick was nothing but a tiny piece of her past, a piece that she would always treasure, but that was all. Because history is just that. History. Chapter 9. After I left Annika's room, I turned on my phone. There were texts and emails from Jeremiah, and they kept coming. I got under my covers and read them all, each and every one. Then I reread them, and when I was done, I finally wrote him back and said, "Give me some space." He wrote, "Okay." And that was the last text I got from him that day. I still kept checking my phone to see if there was anything from him. And when there wasn't, I was disappointed, even though I knew I didn't have a right to be. I wanted him to leave me alone, and I wanted him to keep trying to fix things. But if I didn't know what I wanted, how could he possibly? I stayed in my room, packing up. I was hungry, and I still had meals left on my meal card, but I was afraid I might run into Lacey on campus. Or worse, Jeremiah. Still, it was good to have something to do and to be able to turn the music on loud without having to hear my roommate, Jillian, complain. When I couldn't take the hunger anymore, I called Taylor and told her everything. She screamed so loud I had to hold the phone away from my ear. She came right over with a black bean burrito and a strawberry banana smoothie. She kept shaking her head and saying, "That's Zeta Phi, slut." "It wasn't just her, it was him, too," I said, between bites of my burrito. "Oh, I know. Just you wait. I'm gonna drag my nails across his face when I see him. I'll leave him so scarred. No girl will ever hook up with him again." She inspected her manicured nails like they were artillery. When I go to the salon tomorrow, I'm gonna tell Danielle to make them sharp.
My heart swelled.
There are some things only a friend who's known you your whole life can say, and instantly, I felt a little better. You don't have to scar him, but I want to. She hooked her pinky finger with mine.
Are you okay?
I nodded. Better, now that you're here. When I was sucking down the last of my smoothie, Taylor asked me, "Do you think you'll take him back?" I was surprised and really relieved not to hear any judgment in her voice.
"What would you do?" I asked her.
"It's up to you."
"I know, but..."
"Would you take him back?" "Under ordinary circumstances, no. If some guy cheated on me while we were on a break, if he so much as looked at another girl, no, he'd be donezo." She chewed on her straw.
"But Jeremy's not some guy. You have a history together.
What happened to all that talk about scarring him? Don't get it twisted. I hate him to death right now. He effed up in a colossal way.
But he'll never be just some guy. Not to you. That's a fact."
I didn't say anything, but I knew she was right.
"I could still round up my sorority sisters and go slash his tires tonight." Taylor bumped my shoulder.
"Hmm? What do you think?" She was trying to make me laugh. It worked. I laughed for the first time in what felt like a long time.
Chapter 10. After our fight the summer before senior year, I really thought that Taylor and I would make up fast, the way we always did. I thought it would blow over in a week, tops. Because what were we really even mad about? Sure, we both said some hurtful things. I called her a child, she called me a crappy best friend, but it wasn't like we'd never had a fight before. Best friends fought. When I got home from Cousins, I put Taylor's shoes and her clothes in a bag, ready to take them over to her house as soon as she gave me the signal that we were done being mad at each other. It was always Taylor who gave the signal. She was the one who initiated making up. I waited, but it didn't come. I went to Marcy's a couple of times, hoping I'd run into her and we'd be forced to talk things out. Those times I was at Marcy's, she never came. Weeks passed. The summer was almost over. Jeremiah kept saying the same thing he'd been saying for all of July and most of August. "Don't worry, you guys will make up. You guys always make up." "You don't get it. This isn't like before," I told him. "She wouldn't even look at me."
"All of this over a party," he said, which pissed me off.
"It's not over a party."
"I know, I know." "Hold on a sec, Bells."
I heard him talking to someone, and then he came back on the phone.
"Our hot wings just got here. Want me to call you back after I eat? I can be quick."
"No, that's all right," I said.
"Don't be mad,"
I said. "I'm not," and I wasn't. Not really. How could he understand what was going on with me and Taylor? He was a guy. He didn't get it. He didn't get how important, how really and truly vital it was to me that Taylor and I start off our last year of high school together by each other's side. So why couldn't I just call her then? It was partly pride, and partly something else. I was the one who had been pulling away from her this whole time. She was the one who had been holding on. Maybe I thought I was growing past her. Maybe it was all for the best. We'd have to say goodbye next fall. Maybe it would be easier this way. Maybe we'd been codependent, maybe more me on her than the other way around, and now I needed to stand on my own feet. This is what I told myself. When I told this to Jeremiah the next night, he said, "Just call her." I was pretty sure he was just sick of hearing me talk about it, so I said, "Maybe. I'll think about it." The week before school started, the week I usually came back from Cousins, we always went back to school shopping together. Always. We'd been doing it since elementary school. She always knew the right kind of jeans to get. We'd go to Bath and Body Works and get those buy three, get one free kind of deals, and then we'd come home and split everything up so we each had a lotion, a body gel, a scrub. We'd be set until Christmas, at least.
That year, I went with my mom. My mom hated shopping. We were waiting in line to pay for jeans when Taylor and her mom walked into the store carrying a couple of shopping bags each. "Luce!" my mom called out. Mrs. Jewel waved and came right over, with Taylor trailing behind her wearing sunglasses and cut-off shorts. My mom hugged Taylor, and Mrs. Jewel hugged me and said, "It's been a long time, honey." To my mom, she said, "Laurel, can you believe our little girls are all grown up now? My gosh, I remember when they insisted on doing everything together. Baths, haircuts, everything." "I remember," my mother said, smiling. I caught Taylor's eye. Our moms kept on talking, and we just stood there looking at each other, but not really. After a minute, Taylor pulled out her cell phone. I didn't want to let this moment pass without saying something to her. I asked, "Did you get anything good?" She nodded. Since she was wearing sunglasses, it was hard to tell what she was thinking. But I knew Taylor well. She loved to brag about her bargains. Taylor hesitated and then said, "I got some hot boots for 25% off, and a couple of sundresses that I can winterize with tights and sweaters." I nodded. Then it was our turn to pay, and I said, "Well, see you at school." "See you," she said, turning away. Without thinking, I handed the jeans to my mom and stopped Taylor. It could be the last time we ever talked to each other if I didn't say something. "Wait," I said. "Do you want to come over tonight? I bought a new skirt, but I don't know if I should tuck shirts into it or what." She pursed her lips for a second and then said, "Okay. Call me." Taylor did come over that night. She showed me how to wear the skirt, which shoes looked best with it, and which tops. Things weren't the same with us. Not right away, and maybe not ever. We were growing up. We were still figuring out how to be in each other's lives without being everything to each other. The truly ironic thing is that we ended up at the same school. Of all the schools in all the world, we ended up at each other's. It was fated. We were meant to be friends. We were meant to be in each other's lives. And you know what? I welcomed it. We weren't together all the time like we used to be. She had her sorority friends. I had my friends from my hall. But we still had each other. Chapter 11. The next day, I couldn't hold out any longer. I called Jeremiah. I told him I needed to see him, that he should come over, and my voice shook as I said it. Over the phone, I could hear how grateful he was, how eager to make amends. I tried to justify calling him so fast by telling myself that I needed to see him face to face in order to move on. The truth was, I missed him. I, probably just as much as he did, wanted to figure out a way to forget what had happened. But as much as I'd missed him, when I opened my door and saw his face again, all the hurt came rushing back, hard and fast. Jeremiah could see it too. At first he looked hopeful, and then he just looked devastated. When he tried to pull me to him, I wanted to hug him, but I couldn't let myself. Instead, I shook my head and pushed him away from me. We sat on my bed, our backs against the wall, our legs hanging off the edge. I said, "How would I know that you wouldn't do it again? How would I be able to trust that?" He got up. For a second, I thought he was leaving, and my heart nearly stopped. But then he got down on one knee, right in front of me. Very softly, he said, "You could marry me." At first, I wasn't sure I'd heard him right. But then he said it again, this time louder. "Marry me." He reached into his jeans pocket and pulled out a ring. A silver ring with a little diamond in the center. This would just be for starters, until I could afford to pay for a ring myself. With my money, not my dad's. I couldn't feel my body. He was still talking, and I couldn't even hear. All I could do was stare at the ring in his hand.
I love you so much. These past couple of days have been hell for me without you.
He took a breath.
I'm so sorry for hurting you, Bells. What I did was unforgivable. I know that I hurt us, that I'm going to have to work really hard to get you to trust me again. I'll do whatever it takes if you'll let me. Would you be willing to let me try?
I don't know, I whispered. He swallowed, and his Adam's apple bobbed up and down.
I'll try so hard, I swear to you. We'll get an apartment off campus. We can fix it up nice. I'll do the laundry. I'll learn how to cook stuff other than ramen and cereal.
Putting cereal in a bowl isn't really cooking, I said, looking away from him because this picture he was putting in my head, it was too much. I could see it too. How sweet it could be. The two of us, just starting out, in our own place. Jeremiah grabbed my hands, and I snatched them away from him. He said, "Don't you see, Belly? It's been our story all along. Yours and mine. Nobody else's." I closed my eyes, trying to clear my head. Opening them, I said, "You just want to erase what you did by marrying me."
"No! That's not what this is. What happened the other night?"
He hesitated.
"It made me realize something. I don't ever want to be without you. Ever. You are the only girl for me. I've always known it. In this whole world, I will never love another girl the way I love you."
He took my hand again, and this time, I didn't pull away from him.
"Do you still love me?"
he asked. I swallowed.
"Yeah. Then please, marry me."
I said, "You can't ever hurt me like that again." It was half warning, half plea.
"I won't," he said.
And I knew he meant it. He looked at me so determinedly, so earnestly. I knew his face well. Maybe better than anybody now. Every line. Every curve. The little bump on his nose from when he broke it surfing. The almost faded scar on his forehead from the time he and Conrad were wrestling in the rec room and they knocked a plant over. I was there for those moments. Maybe I knew his face even better than my own. The hours I'd spent staring at it while he slept, tracing my finger along his cheekbone. Maybe he'd done the same things to me. I didn't want to see a mark on his face one day and not know how it got there. I wanted to be with him. His was the face I loved. Wordlessly, I slipped my left hand out of his, and Jeremiah's face slackened. Then I held out my hand for him, and his eyes lit up. The joy I felt in that moment, I couldn't even put it into words. His hand shook as he placed the ring on my finger. He asked,
"Isabel Conklin, will you marry me?"
In as serious a voice as I'd ever heard him use. "Yes, I'll marry you," I said. He put his arms around me, and we held on to each other, clinging like we were the other's safe harbor. All I could think was, if we just get through this storm, we will make it. He'd made mistakes. I had too. But we loved each other, and that was what mattered. We made plans all night, where we would live, how we would tell our parents. The past few days felt like another lifetime ago. That day, without another word about it, we decided to leave the past in the past. The future was where we were headed. Chapter 12. That night, I dreamed of Conrad. I was the same age I was now, but he was younger, 10 or 11 maybe. I think he might even have been wearing overalls. We played outside my house until it got dark, just running around the yard. I said, "Susanna will be wondering where you are. You should go home." He said, "I can't. I don't know how. Will you help me?" And then I was sad, because I didn't know how either. We weren't at my house anymore, and it was so dark. We were in the woods. We were lost. When I woke up, I was crying, and Jeremiah was asleep next to me. I sat up in the bed. It was dark. The only light in the room was my alarm clock. It read 4:57. I lay back down. I wiped my eyes, and then I breathed in Jeremiah's scent, the sweetness of his face, the way his chest rose and fell as he breathed. He was there. He was solid and real and next to me, crammed in close the way you have to be when you are sleeping in a dorm room bed. We were that close now. In the morning, when I woke up, I didn't remember right away. The dream was there in the back of my head, in a place I couldn't get to. It was fading fast, almost all the way, but not quite, not yet. I had to think hard and fast to piece it all together, to hold on to it. I started to sit up, but Jeremiah pulled me back toward him and said,
5 more minutes.
He was the big spoon, and I was the little spoon tucked into my spot in his arms. I closed my eyes, willing myself to remember before it was gone. Like those last few seconds before the sun sets, going, going, and then gone. Remember, remember, or the dream will slip away forever. Jeremiah started to say something about breakfast, and I covered his mouth and said, "Shh, one sec." And then I had it. Conrad, and how funny he looked in his denim overalls. The two of us playing outside for hours. I let out a sigh. I felt so relieved. "What were you saying?" I asked Jeremiah. "Breakfast," he said, planting a kiss on my palm. Snuggling in closer to him, I said, 5 more minutes. Chapter 13. I wanted to tell everyone face to face, all at once. In a weird way, it would be perfect timing. Our families would be together in Cousins in a week. A battered women's shelter that Susanna had volunteered at and fundraised for had planted a garden in her honor, and there was going to be a little ceremony next Saturday. We were all going, me, Jer, my mom, his dad, Stephen. Conrad. I hadn't seen Conrad since Christmas. He was supposed to fly back for my mother's 50th birthday party, but he bailed at the last minute.
"Typical Con," Jeremiah had said, shaking his head.
He'd looked at me, waiting for me to agree. I didn't say anything. My mother and Conrad had a special relationship. Always had. They got each other on some level I didn't understand. After Susanna died, they became closer, maybe because they grieved for her in the same way. Alone. My mom and Conrad spoke on the phone often about what I didn't know. So when he didn't come, I could see how disappointed she was, even though she didn't say so. I wanted to tell her, "Love him all you want, but don't expect anything in return. Conrad isn't someone who can be counted on." He did send a nice bouquet of red zinnias, though. "My favorite," she'd said, beaming. What would he say when we told him our news? I couldn't begin to guess. When it came to Conrad, I was never sure of anything. I worried, too, about what my mother would say. Jeremiah wasn't worried, but he so rarely was. He said,
Once they know we're serious, they'll have to get on board because they won't be able to stop us. We're adults now. We were walking back from the dining hall. Jeremiah dropped my hand, jumped onto a bench, threw his head back and yelled, "Hey, everybody! Belly Conklin is gonna marry me!" A few people turned to look, but then kept walking. "Get down from there," I said, laughing and covering my face with my hoodie. He jumped back down and ran around the bench once, his arms up and out like an airplane. He zoomed back over to me and lifted me up by the armpits. "Come on, fly," he encouraged. I rolled my eyes and moved my arms up and down. "Happy?" "Yes," he said, setting me back down on the ground. I was too. This was the Jer I knew. This was the boy from the beach house. Getting engaged, promising to be each other's forever. It made me feel like even with all the changes over the past few years, he was still the same boy and I was still the same girl. Now nobody could take that away from us. Not anymore. Chapter 14. I knew I had to talk to Taylor and Annika before my dad came and got me in the morning. I debated just telling them together, but I knew that Taylor would be hurt if I lumped her, my oldest friend, with Annika, who I had known for less than a year. I had to tell Taylor first. I owed her that much. I knew she'd think we were crazy. Getting back together was one thing, but getting married was something else entirely. Unlike most of her sorority sisters, Taylor didn't want to get married until she was at least 28. I called and asked her to meet me at the Drip House, the coffee shop everyone studied at. I told her I had news. She tried to get it out of me over the phone, but I resisted, saying, "It's the kind of news you have to tell in person." Taylor was already seated with her non-fat iced latte when I got there. She had on her Ray-Bans, and she was texting. She put down her phone when she saw me. I sat down across from her, careful to keep my hand in my lap. Taking off her sunglasses, she said, "You're looking much better today. Thanks, Tay. I feel a lot better." "So, what's up?" She scrutinized me. "Did you guys get back together? Or did you break up for real?" I held up my left hand with a flourish. She looked at it, confused. Then her eyes focused on my ring finger. Taylor's eyes turned huge. "You're effing kidding me! You're engaged?" she screamed. A couple of people turned around and looked at us, annoyed. I shrank down in my seat a little. Grabbing my hand, she said, "Oh my God, let me see that thing!" I could tell she thought it was too small, but I didn't care. "Oh my God," she said, still staring at the ring. "I know," I said, "but, Belly, he cheated on you. We're starting over fresh. I really love him, Tay." "Yeah, but the timing is kinda suspect," she said slowly. "I mean, it's really sudden." "It is, and it isn't. You said it yourself. This is Jer we're talking about. He's the love of my life." She just stared at me, her mouth an O. She sputtered, but why can't you wait at least until after you finish college? We don't see the point in waiting if we're gonna get married anyways." I took a sip of Taylor's drink. "We're gonna get an apartment. You can help me pick out curtains and stuff." "I guess," she said. "But wait, what about your mom? Did Laurel flip her shit?" "We're telling my mom and his dad next week and cousins. We'll tell my dad after." She perked up. "Wait, so nobody even knows yet? Just me?" I nodded, and I could tell Taylor was pleased. She loves being in on a secret. It's one of her top favorite things in life. "It's gonna be an apocalypse," she said, taking her drink back. "Like, dead bodies, like blood in the streets. And when I say blood, I mean your blood." "Gee, thanks a lot, Tay. I'm just speaking the truth.
Laurel is the OG feminist. She's like Gloria freaking Steinem. She's not gonna like this one bit. She'll go all Terminator on his ass and yours. My mom loves Jeremiah. She and Susanna always talked about me marrying one of her sons. It might be like a dream come true for her. In fact, I bet it will be. I knew that wasn't the least bit true, even as I was saying it. Taylor looked unconvinced, too. Maybe, she said. So, when is this happening? This August. That's really, really soon. Hardly gives us any time to plan. Chewing on her straw, she cast a sneaky look my way. What about bridesmaids? Are you going to have a maid of honor? I don't know. We want it to be really small. We're going to do it at the cousin's house. Really casual, like, not a big deal. Not a big deal? You're getting married and you don't want it to be a big deal. I didn't mean it like that. I just don't care about all that stuff. All I want is to be with Jeremiah. All what stuff? Like, bridesmaids and wedding cakes, stuff like that. Liar! She pointed her finger at me. You wanted 5 bridesmaids and a 4-tier carrot cake. You wanted an ice sculpture of a human heart with your initials carved into it, which, by the way, is gross. Tay! She held up her hand to stop me. You wanted a live band and crab cakes and a balloon drop after your first dance. What was that song you wanted to dance to? Stay by Maurice Williams and the Zodiacs, I said automatically. But Taylor, I was probably 10 years old when I said all that stuff. I was really touched that she remembered, though. But I guessed I remembered everything Taylor wanted, too. Doves, little lace gloves, hot pink stiletto heels. You should have everything you want, Belly, Taylor said, her chin jutting out in her stubborn Taylor way. You only get married once. I know, but we don't have the money. And anyway, I don't really care about those things anymore. That was kid stuff. But maybe I didn't have to do all of it. Maybe just some of it. Maybe I could still have a real wedding, but simple. Because it would be nice to wear a wedding dress and to have a father-daughter dance with my dad. I thought Jeremy's dad was loaded. Can't he afford to give you a real wedding? There's no way my mom would let him pay for it. Besides, like I said, we don't want anything fancy. Okay, she conceded. We'll forget the ice sculpture. But balloons are cheap. We can still do balloons. And the carrot cake. We could just do a regular 2-layer, I guess. And I don't care what you say, you're wearing a wedding dress. That sounds good, I agreed, taking a sip of her drink. It felt really nice to have Taylor's blessing. It was like getting permission to be excited, something I didn't know I needed or wanted. And you'll still have bridesmaids, or at least a maid of honor. I'll just have you. Taylor looked pleased. But what about Annika? You don't want Annika to be a bridesmaid? Maybe, I said. And when her face fell, just slightly, I added, but I want you to be my maid of honor. Okay? Tears filled her eyes. I'm so honored. Taylor Jewell, my oldest friend in the world. We'd been through some times together, and I knew now it was pure grace that we'd managed to come out the other side. Chapter 15. Annika was next, and I was dreading it. I respected her opinion. I didn't want her to think less of me. The prospect of being a bridesmaid wasn't going to have any sway over her. That wasn't something she would care about either way. We had decided to room together that fall, in a suite with 2 of our other friends, Shay and Lynn, in the new dorm on the other side of campus. Annika and I were going to buy cute plates and cups. She was bringing her fridge, and I was bringing my TV. Everything was set. We were hanging out in her room later that night. I was packing her books inside a big crate, and she was rolling up her posters. The radio was on, and our campus station was playing Madonna's The Power of Goodbye. Maybe it was a sign. I sat on the floor, putting away the last book, trying to drum up the courage to tell her. Nervously, I licked my lips. Ani, I have something I need to talk to you about, I said. She'd been struggling with the movie poster on the back of her door. What's up? There's no greater power than the power of goodbye. I swallowed. I feel really bad having to do this to you. Annika turned around. Do what? I'm not going to be able to room with you next semester. Her eyebrows were knit together. What? Why? Did something happen? Jeremiah asked me to marry him. She did a double take. Isabel Conklin, shut the shit up! Slowly, I held up my hand. Annika whistled. Wow, that's crazy. I know. She opened her mouth, then closed it. Then she said, do you know what you're doing? Yeah, I think so. I really, really love him. Where are you guys going to live? In an apartment off campus. I hesitated. I just feel bad about letting you down. Are you mad? Shaking her head, she said, I'm not mad. I mean, yeah, it sucks that we won't be living together, but I'll figure something out. I could ask Trina from my dance team, or my cousin Brandy might be transferring here. She could be our fourth. So it wasn't such a big deal after all. My not living with them. Life goes on, I guessed. I felt a little wistful, imagining what it would be like if I was still the fourth. Shay was really good at doing hair, and Lynn loved to bake cupcakes. It would have been fun. Annika sat down on her bed. I'll be fine. I'm just... surprised. Me too. When she didn't say anything else, I asked, do you think I'm making a huge mistake? In her thoughtful way, she asked, does it matter what I think? Yes. It's not for me to judge, Iz. But you're my friend. I respect your opinion. I don't want you to think badly of me. You care too much about what other people think. She said it with sureness, but also tenderness. If anyone else had said it, my mother, Taylor, even Jer, I would have bristled. But not with Annika. With her, I couldn't really mind. In a way, it was flattering to have her see me so clearly and still like me. Friendship in college was different that way. You spend all this time with people, sometimes every day, every meal. There was no hiding who you were in front of your friends. You were just naked. Especially in front of someone like Annika, who was so frank and open and incisive and said whatever she thought. She didn't miss a thing. Annika said, at least you'll never have to wear shower shoes again. Or have to pull other people's hair out of the drain, I added. Jeremiah's hair's too short to get caught. You'll never have to hide your food. Annika's roommate, Joy, was always stealing her food, and Annika had taken to hiding granola bars in her underwear drawer. I might actually have to do that. Jer eats a lot, I said, twisting my ring around my finger. I stayed a while longer, helping her take down the rest of her posters, collecting the dust bunnies under her bed with an old sock I used as a mitten. We talked about the magazine internship Annika had lined up for the summer, and me maybe going to visit her in New York for a weekend. After, I walked down the hall back to my room. For the first time all year, it was really quiet. No hair dryers going. No one sitting in the hallway on the phone. No one microwaving popcorn in the commons area. A lot of people had already gone home for the summer. Tomorrow, I would be gone, too. College life as I knew it was about to change. Chapter 16. I didn't plan to start going by Isabel. It just happened. All my life, everyone had called me Belly, and I didn't really have a say in it. For the first time in a long time, I did have a say. But it didn't occur to me until we, Jeremiah, my mom, my dad and me, were standing in front of my dorm room door on freshman move-in day. My dad and Jeremiah were lugging the TV. My mom had a suitcase, and I was carrying a laundry basket with all my toiletries and picture frames. Sweat was pouring down my dad's back, and his maroon button-down shirt had three wet spots. Jeremiah was sweating, too, since he'd been trying to impress my dad all morning by insisting on bringing up the heaviest stuff. It made my dad feel awkward. I could tell.
"Hurry, Belly," my dad said, breathing hard.
"She's Isabel now," my mother said. I remember the way I fumbled with my key and how I looked up at the door and saw it. "Isabel," it said in gluon rhinestones. My roommates and my door tags were made out of empty CD cases. My roommates, Jillian Caples, was a Mariah Carey CD, and mine was Prince. Jillian's stuff was already unpacked, on the left side of the room, closer to the door. She had a paisley bedspread, navy and rusty orange. It looked brand new. She'd already hung up her posters, a Trainspotting movie poster and some band I'd never heard of called Running Water. My dad sat down at the empty desk. My desk. He pulled out a handkerchief and wiped off his forehead. He looked really tired.
"It's a good room," he said. "Good light."
Jeremiah was just hovering around, and he said,
"I'll go down to the car to get that big box."
My dad started to get up.
"I'll help," he said.
"I've got it," Jeremiah said, bounding out the door. Sitting back down, my dad looked relieved.
"I'll just take a break then," he said.
Meanwhile, my mother was surveying the room, opening the closet, looking in drawers. I sank down on the bed. So this was where I was going to live for the next year. Next door, someone was playing jazz. Down the hall, I could hear a girl arguing with her mother about where to put her laundry bin. It seemed like the elevator never stopped dinging open and closed. I didn't mind. I liked the noise. It was comforting knowing there were people all around me. "Want me to unpack your clothes?" my mother asked. "No, that's all right," I said. I wanted to do that myself. Then it would really feel like my room. "At least let me make up your bed then," she said. When it was time to say goodbye, I wasn't ready. I thought I would be, but I wasn't. My dad stood there, his hands on his hips. His hair looked really gray in the light. He said,
"Well, we should get going if we want to beat rush hour traffic."
Irritably, my mother said, "We'll be fine." Seeing them together like this, it was almost like they weren't divorced. Like we were still a family. I was overcome with this sudden rush of thankfulness. Not all divorces were like theirs. For Stevens and my sake, they made it work and they were sincere about it. There was still genuine affection between them. But more than that, there was love for us. It was what made it possible for them to come together on days like this. I hugged my dad. And I was surprised to see tears in his eyes. He never cried. My mother hugged me briskly, but I knew it was because she didn't want to let go.
"Make sure you wash your sheets at least twice a month," she said.
"Okay," I said,
"and try making your bed in the morning. It'll make your room look nicer."
"Okay," I said again. My mother looked over at the other side of the room.
"I just wish we could have met your roommate."
Jeremiah was sitting at my desk, his head down, scrolling on his phone while we said our goodbyes. All of a sudden, my dad said,
"Jeremiah, are you going to leave now too?"
Startled, Jeremiah looked up.
"Oh, I was going to take Belly to dinner."
My mother shot me a look, and I knew what she was thinking. A couple of nights before, She'd given me this long speech about meeting new people and not spending all my time with Jer. Girls with boyfriends, she'd said, limit themselves to a certain kind of college experience. I'd promised her I wouldn't be one of those kind of girls.
Just don't get her back too late,
my dad said in this really meaningful kind of way. I could feel my cheeks get red, and this time my mother gave my dad a look, which made me feel even more awkward. But Jeremiah just said,
"Oh, yeah, of course,"
in his relaxed way. I met my roommate, Jillian, later that night, after dinner. It was in the elevator, right after Jeremiah dropped me off in front of the dorm. I recognized her right away from the pictures on her dresser. She had curly brown hair, and she was really little, shorter than she'd looked in the pictures. I stood there, trying to figure out what to say. When the other girls in the elevator got off on the sixth floor, it was just the two of us. I cleared my throat and said, "Excuse me, are you Jillian Capel?"
"Yeah," she said, and I could tell she was a little weirded out.
"I'm Isabel Conklin," I said, "your roommate." I wondered if I should hug her or offer her my hand to shake. I did neither, because she was staring at me. "Oh, hi. How are you?" Without waiting for me to answer, she said, "I'm just coming back from dinner with my parents." Later, I would learn that she said, "How are you?" a lot, like it was more of a thing to say, not something she expected an answer to. "I'm good," I said. "I just had dinner too." We got off the elevator then. I felt this excited pitter-patter in my chest, like, wow, this is my roommate. This was the person I was going to be living with for a whole year. I'd thought a lot about her since I got my housing letter. Jillian Capel from Washington, D.C., non-smoker. I'd imagined us talking all night, sharing secrets and shoes and microwave popcorn. When we were in our room, Jillian sat down on her bed and said, "Do you have a boyfriend?" "Yeah, he goes here too," I said, sitting on my hands. I was eager to get right to the girl talk and the bonding. "His name is Jeremiah. He's a sophomore." I jumped up and grabbed a photo of us from my desk. It was from graduation, and Jeremiah was wearing a tie and he looked handsome in it. Shyly, I handed it to her. "He's really cute," she said. "Thanks. Do you have a boyfriend?" She nodded. "Back home." "Neat," I said, because it was all I could think of. "What's his name?"
"Simon."
When she didn't elaborate, I asked, "So, do people ever call you Jill? Or Jilly? Or do you just go by Jillian?" "Jillian. Do you go to sleep early or late?"
"Late. What about you?"
"Early," she said, chewing on her lower lip. "We'll figure something out. I wake up early, too. What about you?"
Sure. Sometimes."
I hated to wake up early. Hated it more than almost anything. "Do you like to study with music on or off?"
"Off?"
Jillian looked relieved. "Oh, good. I hate noise when I study. I need it to be really quiet," she added. "Not that I'm anal or anything." I nodded. Her picture frames were at perfect right angles. When we walked into the room, she'd hung up her jean jacket right away. I only ever made my bed when company came over. I wondered if my sloppy tendencies would get on her nerves. I hoped not. I was about to say so when she turned her laptop on. I guess we were done bonding for the night. Now that my parents were gone and Jeremiah was on his way back to his frat house, I was really alone. I didn't know what to do with myself. I'd already unpacked. I'd been hoping we could explore the hall together, meet people. But she was typing away, chatting with someone. Probably her boyfriend back home. I got my cell phone out of my purse and texted Jeremiah. "Will you come back?" I knew he would. For the hall icebreaker the next night, our RA, Kira, told us to bring one personal item that we felt represented us best. I settled on a pair of swim goggles. The other girls brought stuffed animals and framed photos. and one girl brought out her modeling book. Jillian brought her laptop. We were all sitting in a circle, and Joy was sitting across from me. She was cradling a trophy.